forum for frank talk about what people do for a living. Works do.
Hello and welcome to Works Do. It's September 6, 2012, and this is episode number 46. I'm Kate Gase-Walton. I'm the editor of Works Do, an online collection of essays and interviews in which people ponder their work lives. In this episode, I talk to David Plotz, the editor of the online magazine Slate.
Talking today to David Plotz, who is the editor of Slate. And David, I wanted to start actually by going back in time. You've been at Slate since its inception in 1996, so I'm assuming you're pretty happy there. But I understand there was a time when you were reportedly miserable in a short stint at the Department of Justice. And so I wondered if you could tell me about that, why you decided to go there, and what about it was not a good fit for you.
Sure. So when I graduated from college in 1992, I thought I wanted to go into government. I thought I wanted to go into public policy or law. And rather than going and joining the Clinton campaign, which would have been the smart thing to do, I ended up taking a job at the Department of Justice as a paralegal. I thought if I want to be a lawyer, I should really see what lawyers do, and where better to see them at work than at the Department of Justice, where they're doing mostly good work on behalf of us. And I went there and I met lots of really bright lawyers, and they were doing, in some cases, very interesting and worthy work. But I found it a soul-crushing place. Almost from the very minute I walked into the main justice building on Pennsylvania Avenue, I was trying to escape, because it felt oppressive and bureaucratic, and there were huge stretches of tediousness, and even on the rare occasions when the attorney seemed to accomplish something, it was so mingy, and there was so much wasted work to get there. And these were people who were doing work that was good. I couldn't even imagine what it would be like if you were working on behalf of a client you didn't believe in. And it was a great lesson for me, because the default path for so many people who come out of college with a sort of a social sciences degree, interest in government, and not a specific professional career ahead of them, is to go to law school. And I realized that my stint at DOJ taught me that I shouldn't be a lawyer, even though I probably would have been a pretty good lawyer. I have an analytical temperament, and I can process lots of information pretty quickly. But it was, I think it would have been a wasted career life, or would have been a much tougher career life for me had I done that.
It's interesting to me that you decided to skip law school altogether. You didn't kind of lodge your discontent with that particular work environment. You discovered something deeper then about law in that work experience?
I discovered something deeper.
Like, why did you decide that it wasn't just sort of what was going on at the Department of Justice, but more broadly law wasn't right for you? What got you thinking about journalism instead?
Well, I had done journalism in college, and I had done journalism in high school, and so I'd always had kept my hand in it. I'd worked on the Crimson in college, and I liked asking people about things. I was a curious person, and I've never been able to sort of stay tightly focused around any one thing for a very long time. I'm a skipper. And like to jump around from thing to thing to thing, and I get bored fairly easily. And so journalism is a great profession for that. And I also I'm not an idealist or an ideologue, which I guess are very similar kinds of things. I don't attach to a cause easily, which is a lot of what it takes to work for in politics or to work for a crusading organization of some sort. And journalism is a place where you can sit back and look at things and examine them and come to judgment about them, but coming to judgment about them doesn't lock you into a position for the rest of your life. So when I defected from law, it was pretty clear to me that there was an alternate track. One track would have been to go into government policy. And I think if I'd gotten a job, I tried to get a couple of fellowships working for city governments. If I'd gotten one of those, I think I probably would have stayed in city government. That would have been something I would have loved. I loved urban policy as a subject, but I didn't. And instead, I sent out 100 letters to mostly to small and medium-sized newspapers around the country, got essentially no response, and then got one response from the Winston-Salem Journal in North Carolina. And virtually the same day, I had kind of on a lark sent a letter and a copy of my undergraduate thesis, which was about former Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry. I'd sent that to the editor of the city paper, and he also got back to me. And so I had this choice between the Winston-Salem job and the city paper, and it was pretty easy. I mean, the city paper was an amazing place. It's the free weekly in Washington, D.C. It's like the Village Voice or the Stranger of D.C., and it was a place that minted incredible journalists. And the editor at the time was a man named Jack Schaefer, who was just a stupendous editor, a great leader, a great mentor, teacher, totally fearless. And he took me in and taught me most of what I learned, most of what I know about how to report and how to write.
And I saw that you worked there for a while and then joined Slate when it started. And I was wondering, 16 years ago, you know, in the history of the internet, that's a long time ago. Did it feel like a huge risk at the time to leave a newspaper for an online magazine? What was that decision like for you?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think about that quite a lot. So I had been hired by Jack Schaefer, and I was a staff writer at the city paper for a couple of years. And then Jack left. And a new editor, David Carr, who's now the New York Times, came in. And David was also an amazing editor and colleague, and he made me his deputy. So I was working as his deputy editor. And I think I sort of got tired of being there at City Paper. I got tired of this subject matter. So I was ready to leave. So in that sense, I thought, I've been here a while. I love it. I love David. But there are other opportunities out in the world. And when I heard that Mike Kinsley, who was the founder of Slate, was starting this internet magazine, it was kind of a no-brainer for me. I was young. I was not. I didn't have children at the time. I didn't have a mortgage at the time. And here was a journalist who was one of my heroes working in this new medium. It was obviously experimental. But what did I have to lose? It was a great opportunity for somebody without much to lose. And so I didn't know what the internet was. In fact, at the time I went to Slate, I had literally never been on the web. I had used email a bit, but I had never been on the web. And I wasn't unusual in early 1996 never to have been on the web. Lots of people had never been on the web. But there I was going to work for what was going to be a web magazine without actually having used the medium I was going into. And I don't know, it was clear to me, I guess this gives me a lot more credit than probably I deserve, but I think this is true. It was clear to me that the traditional paths through the media were breaking down, that the normal path, which was you go to a small newspaper, then you go to a big newspaper, and you thrive at a big newspaper, and then you become editor of the New York Times. But that path didn't exist anymore. Or if it existed, it existed for a very, very small number of people. And that what was replacing it was something very different, and no one really knew what it was going to be, but that this digital medium was going to be part of it. And I figured I might as well be on the right side of that. I might as well, I was young. I had no particular bad habits to break. I didn't have any habits at all. And it was a chance to help grow up in this new medium. And it turned out to be a really lucky and wise choice. I was there early and got involved early and given me experience and opportunities that I probably wouldn't have had I stayed at the city paper or had I attempted to jump to a print magazine or a print newspaper at some point.
Right. So when I listened to you and Emily Bazelon and John Dickerson on the Political Gabfest, I'm always struck that here you are, you know, paid to have a point of view, that your job is to weigh in on topics that you find genuinely interesting and important. And one theme that is sort of emerging on Work Stew is those people who have a very low level of cognitive dissonance on the job are, you know, not surprisingly, much happier. So first, I just want to check, is that in fact the case, that your days feel like they're filled with what you would want to be thinking about anyway? Or is that just my fantasy of what life as a Slate editor is like?
Huh, that's a difficult question for me. I think you asked that question of Emily, and I will presume to speak for her for a moment. I think if you ask that question of Emily, the answer would be, I don't know if the answer is no or yes there. The answer would be positive. The answer would be she is always doing more or less the things she wants to do. She's getting to write about subjects she's interested in different forms, in different media. She's getting to, you know, do lots of radio and TV, and she's building a profile for herself and is doing this all the time, doing the things that she loves. I think for me, as the editor, it's slightly different because I don't have daily writing that I get to do, which is the thing that brought me to journalism for the most part. And I spend a lot of my time in meetings where I'm making decisions about sometimes things that are absolutely fascinating and things that are critical to the future of Slate, but sometimes things which are kind of boring or things that I'm not very good at because really my skills are journalistic rather than business or whatever other things that I'm demanded, you know, design, which I have to weigh in on. So in that sense, I think it's not a 100%. It's like but I do get to do, the best thing about being a journalist is that you are essentially paid to be curious about things which you're already curious about and then learn about them and express ideas and opinions and notions about them. That's pretty darn good. And Slate is a particularly good place to do it because the constituency at Slate, the readership at Slate, just wants things to be intelligent and entertaining and witty and smart. And that's when you get to write for that audience, it's a real delight.
Right. And just one last question before I let you get back to all of it. Journalism, it clearly sounds like something that you absolutely love. It's also, especially these days, not particularly associated with economic security. And that brings to mind kind of a debate we've been having at Work Stew, which is kind of the age old, you know, do you do what you love or do you do the math, figure out how to make a living and do what you love on the side. And I'm just wondering, as a father of three kids, what do you imagine you'll be advising your kids when the time comes?
I worry about that a lot. I'm very fortunate to be married to Hanna Rosin, who is an extremely successful journalist, author, who and we've had a marriage where we're, because each of us has always, you know, we've always had one of us who's had a real, usually me, a real full-time steady job, that it's allowed us to take risks with our careers and go off and write books or go try something new. You know, Hanna went from being a magazine writer to being a newspaper reporter to being a freelancer to being an editor to being a book writer. I mean, she's really been able to jump around because there's been an anchoring income and then it's allowed us sort of a freedom to experiment because we have this, we're both economically we're both in pretty good shape. And so we have a luxury that I think a lot of people in journalism don't have. And it's been very, very lucky for us. And I hope, knock wood, it continues. And I don't think that in journalism or in most professions, that looking forward, that you can necessarily count on that. And I think, I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. I think there are people, and I think I'm one of them, for whom security is really valuable, like knowing that you have a steady paycheck and an employer who's solvent is good, and it like makes, you know, it allows me to sleep at night knowing that my children are going to have health insurance. And then I think there are people who are temperamentally don't quite need it that as much, and I don't know where my children will fall, and I think I will let them. I think if your temperament is such that you're willing to tolerate uncertainty and to suffer a little bit, then I would probably counsel suffering and uncertainty, because the risk reward calculation is great. If you take the risk, your rewards are likely to be higher. But if you're somebody who is temperamentally, you know, just needs to know that you're not going to be eating cat food, then perhaps with that child, I would urge towards something un-cat foody. My parents were very good about this. They didn't push me in either direction. They were both people who had extremely secure jobs, like epically secure jobs, which they stayed at for their entire careers. Both of them worked at the same place for their entire careers, which is unheard of now, of course. But they didn't tell me you should really go to law school, or when I went to City Paper, which was sort of a weird thing to do. It was a very underpaid job. It was an uncertain place. They thought, okay, you know, you're young, you can take a chance, no problem. You know what you're doing, you're smart. And I hope I'll have the wisdom with my children to not mess with them too much. They don't need to be messed with.
Well, that sounds like a good note to end on. Before we do that, you mentioned Hannah, and you two are doing a live event, I understand, next week. Is that that's in D.C., right?
We're actually doing two. We're doing one in D.C. on Tuesday, September 11th at 6th and I, which is a big historic synagogue in D.C., and we're doing it the next night in New York. I think the New York event is sold out, but it's both of them are in honor of her book, The End of Men and the Rise of Women. It's this fantastic book she's just written about how the world has changed in terms of the power dynamics between the sexes, and we'll have a sort of mini battle of the sexes. I'll be interrogating her about her book, and she'll be launching the book before, I hope, an engaged audience in both places.
Well, I wish I could be at one of those events. What I will be at is your event here in Seattle. Do you want to just mention what that is before we wrap up?
Absolutely. So the Political Gabfest, which I do with Emily Bazelon and John Dickerson, Slate's chief political correspondent, will be coming to Town Hall on October 4th at 6:30 p.m. The tickets are available at slate.com/Seattle Gabfest, slate.com/Seattle Gabfest. We're going to do a live version of our podcast, and they are super fun shows. It's the night after a presidential debate. It will be really lively, and we've never done a Gabfest on the West Coast, so we're really looking forward to seeing some Seattleites for a great discussion of politics.
That wraps up the interview for today. Thanks again very much to my guest, David Plotz. Thanks also to everyone who's contributed an essay to Work Stew. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening today. The next episode will be released in 2 weeks, and I hope you'll check it out. In the meantime, please let me know what you thought of the interview by sending an email to kate@workstew.com, by posting a comment on the Work Stew website, or by writing a review for iTunes. Thanks again, and bye for now.